Welcome to the best of Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives.
Well, hello, it's great to be with you on Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. My name is Laura Turner. Well, tragedy and devastation can often bring the best out in people. When the Black Saturday bushfires raged across Victoria, the outpouring of support was as strong and determined as the fire itself. One of those grieving for the thousands impacted during the most catastrophic natural disaster the country has seen was an altruistic mother of two who led the way in establishing a charity to assist those in need. And, well, like a phoenix rising from the ashes, this great Australian has helped repair the lives of the vulnerable and assist them getting back on their feet, not just with the fires, but she continues to do this to this very day. It is my great pleasure to welcome the founder of St Kilda Mums, Jessica McPherson. Welcome to the show. How are you, Jess?
I'm great. Thank you for having me.
No, it is my absolute pleasure. Your organisation, St Kilda Mums has gone from strength to strength. It is incredible in 10 years, as I just mentioned, since Black Saturday, that the things that you have achieved. Do you pinch yourself?
I do. I really do.
Yeah.
It's incredible. Probably the most beautiful thing that happens is some of the families we've helped have returned the goods to us.
Oh.
Sometimes it's a grandparent, sometimes it's a dad, and they are so overwhelmed with emotion through, you know, coming to visit us and say thank you in person and hand everything back to us. And that's amazing when you see families have come out the other end of the crisis that they were experiencing and they're now in a position to give back and pay it forward, you know, two expressions that are possibly a little overused, but it does really sum up what goes on. It's this circle of giving and this understanding that, you know, when a child comes into your life, things can be disruptive. Things can change and things can not go according to plan. And it's okay to ask for help. It's totally okay to ask for help.
Mm. The St Kilda Mums network is huge now, isn't it? I mean, it's not just St Kilda. I mean, and that's a little bit misleading in itself, isn't it, St Kilda Mums, because you help the whole state.
That's right. And we operate in Geelong as Geelong Mums and we operate in Ballarat as Eureka Mums. Mm-hmm. So between those three cities, we cover about 80%, 85% maybe of the Victorian population.
Wow.
But we're now shipping goods to any address in Victoria. Thanks to some really generous support from philanthropists, but also from Victorian Freight Services, which is a transportation company that will deliver to any address in Victoria for us. So we're very focused on expanding into regional Victoria, and we don't believe that living in the country should be any reason why you can't get the same good quality nursery goods that you can in the city.
Some of our most vulnerable people would be living in regional Victoria too, wouldn't they?
Yeah, that's correct. There's a very interesting report published by the Victorian Council of Social Services in November last year that points to a much higher rate of childhood poverty in the country versus the city. And that's something like, I think it's 29%. I'd have to go back and have a look at it. But it's a very, very high rate of children living in poverty and experiencing things like food insecurity.
Mm. So getting the lovely donated goods out to regional Victoria is of high priority, I could imagine.
That's right, yeah.
Do you have a reach into parts of Australia as well, or is it Victoria that you're based in at the moment?
Our focus is very much Victoria, but we have a vision of a future where we waste less, we share more, and we care for every baby and child. And a big part of the vision is around the sharing, because back in 2012, when a group of like-minded mums in Sydney contacted us and asked for help, we realised that we could take everything that we'd learnt in the previous 3 years or so and share that and get them established quickly. And we've gone on to help. There are now about 12 what we call sister organisations operating here in Victoria, but also right across Australia. And we are getting together this month. We're having our first round table where as many of us are getting into a one room as possible, but we're also dialing in with Perth and the Gold Coast and the ACT, because there's actually a sister organisation in every state and also the ACT. And we're going to talk about how we can collaborate more, share more.
Yeah.
We also added up our impact, so the value of the material aid that we had distributed over the last year. And in total, it's over $11 million. It's closer to $12 million worth of goods distributed across Australia. And everybody is working with our model.
Yeah.
Everybody is, recycling nursery goods, clothing, toys, making sure everything is very clean, very safe, and giving everything to social workers. And I think this is a really key thing for any listeners who might not have heard of us before, is that we don't provide anything directly to the families. We give everything to social workers, maternal child health nurses, midwives and other health professionals who are supporting that family through the crisis that they're living with or the difficulties that they're having. And the material aid adds value to their service.
And they would know exactly what those people need and
Absolutely.
Be able to distribute it effectively.
Absolutely. Yeah. And in some instances, if it's a first child, in some instances the family haven't had time to prepare and they're not really sure about what they need. And, we're helping, unfortunately, for many families, family violence occurs in pregnancy for the first time. So there's some families that are, maybe living in a women's refuge or they've had to move interstate to escape violence. And If you're trying to leave a violent marriage, you don't really have time to sit down with a shopping catalogue and plan what you're going to get for your baby,
Or even pack the car properly.
Or you may have actually done that. You may have already fitted out your nursery and you've just had to walk away.
Yeah.
So for those getting back to the way that we deliver the service, and it's exactly the same right across Australia. Everybody, we all do everything the same, and it's about strengthening those relationships. And we work with 260 different social service agencies and local governments and hospitals and even child protection. We work with foster families, kinship care situations. Yeah. We even help the International Student Liaison Officer at Melbourne University because, surprise, surprise, sometimes babies come along to a university, maybe an international university student who hasn't taken out pregnancy insurance on their insurance policy, and then they have, they've got their costs.
You thought of everyone.
Well, we didn't really think of everyone. Yeah. The social workers came to us.
Yes, of course. Yeah.
I remember a story about a Greek mum. She was Greek as in from Greece.
Yes.
And she'd come to Australia because, they've had a terrible recession there.
Yeah, it's been terrible.
And she came to Australia with her husband to work and she was 45 and they'd never had children. Mm-hmm. So they didn't take out the pregnancy policy for their international, the health insurance policy that they took. And she became pregnant whilst living in Australia. So whilst that's an incredible, it's a miracle. I would give my eye teeth to have a baby at 45 without IVF, etc.
Yes.
This miracle baby came along. But they were in a really difficult financial situation. And because they didn't have adequate insurance, she was the Sunshine Hospital, I think, where she was going to give birth. They were going to charge her much, much more than
tens of thousands of dollars, isn't
I think it's $6,000 was the quote that that was shared with us. And she couldn't really afford the antenatal care and of course she wasn't going to be able to work. So the whole purpose, she was only coming to Australia for 12 months and the whole purpose was to earn some money to take back home so they could have a better life back in Greece. And so to be able to help somebody in that situation where you really, all I wanted to say to that mum was, oh my God, you're so lucky to have a baby at 45.
Yeah.
And, and I know that this may not have been your plan, but this is, we want to help you. Mm. We want to make sure that this is as positive an experience, even though it's a shock.
Yeah.
We want this to be as positive an experience as possible. So it's great to be able to help out in those cases.
Now, we'll talk a lot more about St Kilda Mums in a bit, but I want to talk about you first. Like a lot of great Australians, we've claimed you from the land of the long white cloud, haven't we? You're a Kiwi.
Oh, could you tell by my accent?
Just a little. Did life start in New Zealand for you?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I did grow up in the Wairarapa, which is near Wellington in the country, great grape-growing region.
Yep.
I grew up on a farm, which is perhaps why I'm so passionate about country Victorians getting the help that they need. I grew up in a small country town with a population of 4,000. I went to the local high school, and when I was 17, I had the extraordinary fortune to win a student exchange, and I went and lived in Italy for 12 months
when
I was 17, which was incredibly formative. And I think, you know, probably my confidence around public speaking and even being here talking to you today, a lot of that stems from the huge amount of debating that I did in high school, followed by
have a good debate in high school.
yes. And then I went to university and got into hospitality whilst studying, and then kind of fell into working in the wine trade. So
I was going to say, you spent a lot of time working with wine.
I did. And I had five great years with Montana Wines, both in Auckland, and then they moved me to Sydney. And Montana doesn't exist anymore, but they were the number one winemaker in New Zealand back then. And they were bought out by Pernod Ricard, and now they're called Brancott Estate.
Okay.
And then I had this incredible opportunity to set up Oyster Bay.
Oh my God, was that you?
Yeah.
Stop it.
Yeah.
I could kiss you.
Oh, well, thank you.
An Oyster Bay.
Well, actually, you know, when I first came over in 2000 with Montana, it was a tough slog selling New Zealand wine.
Really?
Oh my God, it was so hard. My job was to sell to cafes and restaurants.
Yeah.
And restaurateurs would say, sommeliers and restaurants would say things to me like, all New Zealand wine is S*T. Your Sauvignon Blanc is not bad, but you cannot make red wine to save you. And I would never, ever put a New Zealand wine on my wine list, because we have, it was Sydney, right? In the year 2000.
Yeah.
We only have Hunter Valley wines on our wine list here anyway. So, you know, it was really, really
tough.
Look
at a wine list now, and it is sometimes
much more representational of Australia. Yeah. Well, I don't know about 50-50.
I see so much. I love New Zealand wine. Maybe I'm looking for it. But
yeah, maybe you are. Yeah.
It's everywhere now.
So it was really tough in the beginning. And with Oyster Bay and Oysters, I had this fantastic wine rep working for me up in Brisbane, and she had this brilliant idea, which was to, whenever we did an in-store tasting of Oyster Bay, we would take along 3 dozen oysters with us. Mm-hmm. And not every person would accept an oyster, but everyone remembered the wine. And I think we started rolling out that Oyster Bay and Oysters plan right across Australia. Yeah. Vintage sellers were great supporters in the early days. And people remembered the wine. And we had a very ambitious target, which was to be the leading New Zealand winemaker in Australia.
Yep.
That was our goal. And within about 2.5 years, I think we were the leading white wine brand in Australia. Mm-hmm. So Australians were looking for lower alcohol, fruitier, sweeter wines, and Marlborough Sauvignon Blanc came along at the right time. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, but I mean, I love Australian wine, so that's part of why I stayed and became a sottozon, as we say in New Zealand. I'm now an Australian sottozon.
Oh, sottozon, yeah, of course.
But that's why I stayed here.
Glad you admit it.
Well, the main reason why I stayed here is I moved to Melbourne in 2005.
I was going to ask, because you met your husband and moved to Melbourne. Did you meet him in Sydney or?
Yeah, we met through the wine trade, and he wasn't prepared to move to Sydney. And if I moved to Melbourne, that was okay. But he was hilarious, because when we came to Melbourne and we started looking for somewhere to live, he said, it can only be on map 58 of the Melways.
Oh, I think I've heard that before.
Have you heard that before?
Yeah,
it's
got to
be on map 58. So guess what? We're on map 58. We're in D12, but we're on map 58.
You're just on map 58. Well, that is. And you had your first child, Carolina.
Yes, Carolina was born in 2006.
Beautiful.
And that was life changing.
Of course.
When I first moved to Melbourne, I was still working in the wine trade. I had a role for another New Zealand winemaker that involved 12 weeks of international travel a year, which was pretty tough with my first baby, but somehow I managed to do it. Because I was working from home, I found it really hard to make friends. So the first year that I lived in Melbourne, you know, Melbourne can be, you know, people have got their family, they've got their friends, and they've got their football club, and you know, it's hard to get in when you're an outsider. So it's quite lonely the first year. But as soon as my pregnancy started to show, you know, people would just start talking to you. Yeah. It's a bit like getting a puppy. Yeah. It's a great way to make friends.
And then when you have a baby, people don't stop talking to you.
That's right. So Carolina, you know, her birth meant that I went to mother's group and I started to make friends.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I felt a little more settled and a little happier, but I didn't really fall in love with Melbourne and all the incredible people in it until I started St Kilda Mums and started working with, you know, all these other incredible volunteers and meeting people from all walks of life and from all over the city, and really, you know, having a common purpose, having something to talk about other than where you went to high school and, you know, all of that superficial stuff, volunteering, having a common bond, and having something to do outside of your bubble of your family and your neighbourhood, that was really fantastic for me. Now I feel like I know Melbourne and Australia so much better.
Well, plenty more still to come on Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. Up next, we will hear how Jessica McPherson founded the charity group St Kilda Mums.
You're listening to the best of Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives.
Welcome back to Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. Tonight, we are celebrating the life of philanthropist Jessica McPherson. I got the word out, Jessica. I was worried about that. So we were talking about your, you moved to Australia, you worked in the wine industry. Did you have a twinkle in your eye when you had your first child, Carolina, that you wanted to help others? I mean, how does that come about? We know that Black Saturday might have been the catalyst, but did you, before that event, know that that's where your life was going to lead or have hope?
No, I didn't. I didn't really at all. The Black Saturday event was really the catalyst for St Kilda Mums in a couple of ways. First of all, you know, there was this huge outpouring of grief and Melburnians, you know, Victorians in general, went out of their way to help in a very practical way. And my neighbour was actually volunteering out at a big warehouse somewhere in Dandenong, and they were sorting through all the donations for Black Saturday, and there was just so much stuff. So first of all, her first concern was that all the baby gear, prams, cot, car seats, so all of that sort of stuff that was being donated was kind of being put aside in the too hard basket because nobody was skilled enough to check or clean or repair or whatever. So they were concerned about safety with that equipment. And then secondly, they were sort of instructed, because there was so much, they were given instructions like, keep everything new, like we'll prioritise everything that's new. So what was happening is that the Target Polar Fleece knee blanket in the plastic bag was being put forward, but the king size mohair and alpaca blanket,
which was going to keep you far more warm. And
correct. Yeah. That was kind of being held back as, well, it's not new. Her frustration was that the volunteers that were sorting the goods and the people who were sort of in charge of telling the volunteers who were sorting the goods what to do, they weren't skilled. They didn't. Yeah. They couldn't recognise quality. And she was an amazing influence on me because she had actually, she worked as an op shop manager and she really knew, she could really tell quality. She could she really knew what people would be prepared to pay for, what, you know, what was valuable and what wasn't, what was junk and what wasn't. And in the early days, when she was volunteering for us, she could, I mean, she could just look at a garment, a bit of baby clothing and say yes, no. And we would say, can you please explain to us why this particular onesie has passed your check and this one hasn't? She could articulate that very clearly. So she would say, well, the neck is gone. It's out of shape. There's stains and stuff. So she was a really valuable volunteer in the early days. But I think realising that op shops no longer sold nursery goods, because they didn't have the skilled volunteers who could tell whether things were safe or not, realising that a lot of this stuff was being left in hard rubbish, roadside waste, or being dropped off at the tip, made me think, well, there's got to be a better way. It's just not, we can't just keep burying this stuff in landfill. The story that I love to tell, the story of one pram, I don't know if you've heard this story before.
Yeah, let's hear it.
I organised a pram for a mum who was going to the same maternal child health centre as me, seeing the same nurse as me. So my son was born a little bit early on February 4th.
Mario.
He was born 3 days before Black Saturday, and he was underweight. And because it was so hot, I was taking him in to see my nurse twice a week to be weighed, just to make sure that he was growing and not dehydrating with the heat. And I arrived on this ridiculous, you know, 36-degree day, and I'd driven up in the car, and I only lived about 700 metres away, but I drove.
Of course.
And I got in there, and there was a mum leaving, and she was carrying her baby in her arms, and I asked my nurse, you know, oh, well, is her husband waiting outside in the car? No, no, her husband's at work. She's going home.
She's walking home.
Where's her pram? Oh. So my question was, where's her pram? She doesn't have a pram. Her husband doesn't earn a lot of money. I believe they've got a pram on lay-by, but they haven't been able to afford to get it yet. To which I said, well, I hope she doesn't live too far away. And the nurse said, well, actually, she lives in Windsor and we're on Chapel Street, Carlisle Street intersection. So she's walking, you know, three quite long blocks in the middle of the day, 36 degree day.
With a new baby.
With a new baby in her arms. And, you know, I'm imagining all the hazards, you know, the cobblestones, you know, the wheelie bins and the footpath.
And,
you know,
and the I'm cars just, in and out of driveways.
Yeah, all of that, all of that. And I'm just thinking this is it's too hot to be carrying a baby in your arms. And so I offered to get a pram. Initially the nurse said, no, look, I don't think they'll accept anything secondhand. But I managed to convince my nurse that it would be a good quality pram and it'd be clean and it'd be great. And I dropped the pram down to the centre and the nurse passed it on to the mum and she was indeed very grateful. It was a fantastic pram. And it just so happened that her mother-in-law was visiting for a short period of time following the birth, and because her mother-in-law was there and because they had the pram, they were able to attend one of the mother's group sessions. The mother-in-law was able to report back to the husband that it was, you know, it was a suitable activity for the wife to be doing. You know, he was very protective of his wife. You know, they were new to Australia. She ended up attending that mother's group, which morphed into a play group, and staying connected with those mums, you know, over these past 10 years. I saw the nurse a couple of years ago and she said that that mum had then gone on to teach all the other women in her mother's group how to cook because she was a fantastic cook, and that they all stayed friends. And that, that one pram, that, that incredible gift had meant, you know, because she, had she not had the pram, she wouldn't have gone with the mother-in-law. She never would have made it to mother's group and she would have been incredibly socially isolated. But the fact is today, you know, these 10-year-old kids have got mums that are all still friends, women that have learned how to cook, and somebody who is
it's much
more integrated into...
Ripple effect.
Huge difference that one pram can make. And we always call a pram a freedom machine.
Yes, you do.
Because you can get out of the house, you can get to the shops, you can get to the appointments, you can get your five-year-old to school, all of those things that are so important.
You do the one pram with the lady in the health centre. How does that snowball into the huge organisation that is St Kilda Mums today?
The other big kind of defining moment or kind of beginning moment for us was I had taken some things that Murray had outgrown, you know, nappies and preemie clothing and things, and had offered them to my nurse, thinking, you know, knowing in fact that they were working with some vulnerable families. And she said, oh, look, just pop that in the photocopying room. And when I got into the photocopying room, it was overflowing with donations from other parents who'd had the same kind of idea with me. We want to get our stuff directly to the families that need it. We don't want to drop it at the op shop. We want to give it directly.
You don't know where it goes.
Well, we just want to make sure it goes to someone in need. That was important to us. When I walked into this photocopying room, it was a mess, and I volunteered to get a working bee together and we'd sort it out. So we spent a day there. It was my mother's group and a few other people roped in, and we pulled everything out. We checked everything. We packaged everything by size and gender, labelled everything on the shelving. And at the end of the day, the nurses were completely blown away. Like, for them, it was life-changing because it was a resource that they knew was there, but, you know, they would never know what they would find when they went kind of hunting for things. And we realised that we'd made a huge difference, and that we were in fact kind of honouring the promise of all the people who'd made those donations by making it easier for the nurses to find what they could get when they need it. So there was, there is, there still is the same enhanced care nurse working in the city of Port Phillip. So enhanced care is more in home contact. Right? So it's a specific type of maternal and child health service. That means that the nurse has got the ability to go and visit the family more frequently at home, especially if the family's kind of disengaged with their visits, which are critical when your babies are tiny, to go and get those weigh-ins and make sure your baby's hitting all those milestones. And the enhanced care nurse was, you know, she was the one who was accessing these goods most of the time. And what it meant is that instead of showing up on somebody's doorstep as an authority, she showed up on someone's doorstep bearing gifts. It wasn't long before she started telling other social workers that were helping the same families about us, and we started to get more requests for help from more social workers. And then we also sort of started a little, it started out with a little email list with all of our friends where we would ask for specific items, and that email list kept growing.
We still have the email list. I mean, for listeners, I'm a volunteer at St Kilda Mums and I get the emails all the time. We need car seats, we need cots, we need this, we need that. But it works, doesn't it? People see the need and the help.
Yeah, it does. And a lot of people put their baby stuff into storage thinking that they'll hang on to it. But a car restraint only has an 8-year life and a cot only has a 10-year life. So there's actually not much point putting the stuff in the attic and saving it for your grandies. Mm. The safety standards are reviewed frequently. Car restraints suffer from fatigue if they're especially left in cars in the sun a lot. You know, they don't last forever. The standards also change with car restraints. So there's no point hanging on to this stuff. And likewise with clothing. Like if you put your baby clothing away today, if you put all of them away today, and then you pull them out in 20 years' time, trust me, they're not going to look as beautiful. No. Keep a few key pieces.
Yes, yeah, some
keep
sentimental
a few key pieces. Yeah.
You put the dream into reality, you establish yourselves in a warehouse in St Kilda. And I've gone fast forward because you started out in your lounge room, did you?
Or
in
front
your
porch,
front
back garden.
Yeah. Where you would organise all the goods and distribute them. Obviously, things escalated and you needed a proper home.
Yeah, they did.
And that's how you end up in Vale Street, St Kilda.
Yes, but meanwhile, we'd spent 3 years working out of a double garage in Elwood.
Right.
Which was pretty extraordinary.
Yeah.
And our own homes.
Yes.
But then in early 2013, we managed to raise enough money to secure the rent on a warehouse in Vale Street, St Kilda, which was pretty incredible because we did that before we had any paid staff.
Wow.
I don't recommend that.
A bit stressful. You also had two young children and, a husband
it's
and
like,
family
you know, when,
to run.
When you're at the point where you're leasing a 300 square metre warehouse and you've got security issues and occupational health and safety to consider, you really need to have somebody to take charge of that. So,
Well,
fortunately, we were able to employ me as the first staff member about 3 months later.
Yeah. So. And fortunately, you had so much stuff given to you that it's filled to the roof rafters there.
Yes.
And you had the place across the road in Vale Street as well. So you've just expanded like you couldn't even imagine. And now St Kilda Mums, you've been searching for a new home because gotten so big.
That's right.
Have you had any luck?
We have. We are currently negotiating heads of agreement for a property in the southeast. Mm-hmm. Fingers and toes and everything's crossed because our leases expire in Vale Street on the 31st of May.
Yeah.
And so once that happens, we're in a very vulnerable situation where, you know, we can potentially stay and go month to month, but if the landlord finds another tenant, then we are definitely going to be homeless.
Yeah.
So we've been working very hard. We've known that we've had to be out of Vale Street by May 2019. We've known this for 6 years.
Yeah.
We know exactly what we need in terms of the criteria. The good news is the place that we are currently negotiating with is three times the size, which means three times the impact, which is very important to know.
Yeah.
And also that the rent is only about another 30% on what we're already paying in Vale Street. So rent is much more affordable.
Yes.
Further out, it's no more than 20 kilometres from St Kilda.
Yep.
Most of our volunteers live in the sort of southeast. In fact, we did a mapping exercise with our volunteers and staff, and the epicentre for both groups was Bentley East.
Okay. So perfect.
Southeast is perfect. Yeah. Also, we're going to be very close to Monash Hospital, to all of those arterial roads. And we know that there's a huge amount of need in the southeast.
Yeah.
So there's this huge growth corridor around Pakenham, Cranbourne, etc. The birth rate is three times the national average down there. And we're also helping families in the west and in the northwest from our Geelong and Ballarat locations. Yeah. So social workers in Melton and Bacchus Marsh duck up to Eureka Mums, and Eureka Mums stretches all the way out to Ararat, Horsham, up to Bendigo, all of that Golden Plains area. Golden Plains? Goldfields.
Goldfields. Yeah.
Golden Plains is down in Geelong.
Yes.
And in Geelong, Geelong mums are actually doing a lot in the west, so Wyndham and Tarneit and places like that. It's easier for the social workers to get down to Geelong than it is to come across the bridge and come to St Kilda. So for us, being sort of in that area near Monash Hospital is going to be fantastic for the social workers. That drive from, the Yarra Valley, they drive from Broadmeadows, they drive from all over.
Yeah. Well, stay with us. I'm Laura Turner and you're listening to Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, Celebrating Lives, and plenty more still to come with Jessica McPherson.
Great to have your company on Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, Celebrating Lives. I'm Laura Turner, and tonight we're chatting with St Kilda Mums founder Jessica McPherson, who has just told us about how St Kilda Mums has gotten so big and so successful and also outgrown their lease that they found a new home somewhere in the southeast of Melbourne. St Kilda Mums is incredible in that the work that I have done there as a volunteer, I was amazed in the right way that when I started how strict it was in terms of the quality of products. And I used to pack, and well, it changed when I got pregnant that I did it from home. But when you go in, you would pack clothing bundles for babies. It makes you think as well about the stuff you'd throw out. You think, oh, I'll just send that to the op shop and it might be stained or whatever. But that you do not accept that, do you? And I love the fact that when I was being taught how to pack a bundle of clothing, you go through every inch of that clothing, you sniff it, you examine it with your eyes, you hold it up to the light. And that's because it's about the message that you send the person who is receiving it as well. You're not, we don't want you to think you're worth or your child is worth a maybe possibly little bit stained or ripped onesie for a baby. It needs to be presentable and clean and nicely folded, doesn't it? Because it's as much logistically helpful as it is psychologically.
That's right. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And we see everything that we distribute as a gift. Mm. So a gift is not dirty or stained. Mm. A gift is in great condition. And we also recognise that a lot of the families that we're helping are living in crisis. So they don't have access to washing machines. Well, yeah. The clothing has to be clean because the mum is going to literally pull it out of the bag and put it on the child. So it has to be freshly laundered. It has to be beautiful quality. The fact is, whilst 1 in 5 Victorian children are born into poverty, 4 in 5 are not. And for many of us, we consume more than we need. And we buy more baby clothing than we need. And at St Kilda Mums, we receive a huge variety of children's clothing and we rehome clothing up to the age of 12 years. You know, different brands, some is new, some secondhand, etc. There is that much choice. It's very easy to say to our volunteers, discard anything. Yeah. Discard anything that's not saleable. Discard anything that you wouldn't give to your best friend for her first child.
Yeah.
Now, the important thing to note is that our recycling partner ships the clothing that we don't include in our bundles to the third world where it's distributed to a child, to a baby,
yes,
somewhere.
Yep.
The fact that the clothing is stained, it might need to be washed, it might need to be repaired, actually provides employment opportunities in that third world country, so that's great. So we can say to our donors, we ask that you freshly launder everything. We ask that you consider the families who's receiving these goods. But rest assured that our volunteers are passionate about presentation. They're passionate about quality. Yes, we sniff. The clothing has to pass the sniff test. And every garment is actually handled twice because it's sorted and then it's bundled. Mm. And so that way we can keep the quality very high. And we hear feedback from social workers who'll say, you know, my family needed some things. I was able to offer them. I offered them a choice. I could go to St Kilda. I could drive to St Kilda Mums and get them the clothing secondhand, or I could give them a $100 Target voucher. Mm. And they chose the St Kilda Mums because they know they're going to get much more value.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So there's a cost, of course, to the social worker, and that is their time because they have to place the order on our online ordering system. Then they have to make an appointment to come in and pick it up. If it's an emergency situation, we have a special program called the Safe Start Program, which provides emergency material aid to maternity wards. Mm-hmm. So there is, in some maternity wards, there's stock on hand so that if the social worker discovers the family's about to be discharged and they've got to drive back to Shepparton but there's no car restraint, then they can they can quickly make one available.
Yeah.
So in cases of urgent need, we can provide things faster.
Yeah.
But most of the time we are relying on the social worker to place the order on behalf of the family and then arrange a time to come and pick it up and then take it directly to the family's home. So what we want to provide is a one-stop shop to that social worker, that they can come and they can get everything they need for the baby that's on the way, but they can also get clothing, books and toys for the older children in the family they don't miss out.
Do you know what I love as well? I love that you're able to give back to the volunteers too, because a lot of women give up, and men, give up a lot of their time. They dedicate themselves. Even if it's a couple of hours a week, they are doing that to help, and it's lovely. But what I love seeing as a volunteer is the little forms that are filled out from the mum who they don't identify themselves, but they tick the boxes and they, you know, they say, why was this helpful and what message do I have to the person who packed this or whatever? Mm. And they write the most beautiful things in that little card, you know, thank you, you've changed, you've made my day, or my children were so happy to unpack these toys. And, you know, without wanting to sound too gushy, whenever I read those, you know, you think of, you know, whether it's the refugee family or the really needy family who have nothing, who someone gave them something, you know, and it's beautiful. And as a volunteer, you just feel so good about, you know, helping.
You do feel good, yeah.
You have such a huge pool of volunteers. I'm sure that that's a big part of it, to give back to them too.
Yeah, I think our volunteers, you know, the values that we share, big part is around doing something practical to help people going through a tough time. So that's a big part of it. But there's also a big part of it is around this issue of sustainability, about recycling, and about living differently. So not just buying things and throwing them out constantly, but actually what can we do to give these goods a second lease of life. Mm-hmm. So those are kind of the two broad cohorts. And our volunteers are extraordinary. I mean, we have volunteers that come in 1 or 2 days a week, 3 to 4 hours at a time, and have been doing so for 6 years, 8 years, et cetera, and are really a huge part of our story. And volunteers come in and they have great ideas about how we can do things better.
Yeah.
And I always embrace that innovation and that enthusiasm and say, sure, why not? Let's give it a go. Let's try it and see how it goes. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah. Well, beautiful. Stay with us. There's plenty more still to come on Great Australian Lives with Jessica McPherson.
You're listening to the best of Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives.
This is Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, a family-owned business since 1934. Tobin Brothers Funerals is celebrating lives, and tonight we are celebrating the life of St Kilda Mum founder Jessica McPherson, who's, can we call it a business?
Charity,
of course, not a business, it's a charity, has exploded across Victoria. The bittersweet factor to that is that people need you. They need recycled children and baby goods. They need the clothing that's donated, the cots, the car seats. But you are doing extraordinary things to help Victorians. And for that, you're given an OAM.
That's right. That was This Australia Day.
Yeah.
Yes.
You look a bit embarrassed.
Well, I'm still a little bit unknown because the investiture ceremony is next month on the 4th of April, and I'm going to be going to Government House here in Victoria, and I've got the most beautiful invitations on the most beautiful.
Yeah, they are. I went to one last year. It is lovely.
Right. Well, so you know a lot more about it than I do.
Really nice.
Yeah. So my husband and my two kids and my mum's flying over from New Zealand, so I just can't wait to see.
Can you believe life's got to this point? I mean, you were a wine lady once upon a time. Now you're an honorary Australian.
I am an Australian. I'm a citizen.
It's that chip on your shoulder about Kiwis. I didn't want to call you. And now you've been given an OAM. I mean, that's amazing. That's a credit to the incredible work that can't have been easy all of this time.
The challenges were easy to overcome with the help of many. Right? Mm. So obviously I haven't done this by myself, and the OAM, I'm the lucky person who's the figurehead who's been recognised in this way. But it really is something that I think our volunteers know is an acknowledgement of all of their hard work.
Yeah.
And the team was just so completely beside themselves when the news came out. That you know, they know that this is really an award for St Kilda Mums, and I just happen to be the figurehead because there actually isn't an equivalent honour for an organisation at this kind of level. So it's definitely a team effort, and I think I've, you know, my role as leader now as CEO and the spokesperson for the organisation is very much about communicating the vision that we have. And the vision is very simple, and it's very easy for people to rally around. And the charity itself, the organisation, is the vehicle that brings that vision to life. And if everybody shares the vision and wants to live in it, you know, build this future. We're talking about building this future where there's more caring
less
for
waste,
each other.
More care.
Then that's easy to rally behind. And you know, we've talked about the extraordinary growth, and in fact the growth is sad because the growth means there's unmet need.
Yeah.
But last year we helped 18,535 babies and children, and more than 5,000 of them were younger than 12 months of age. Mm. So 5,000 babies, and we estimate that that is about a third of all babies born into poverty in Victoria each year. So it's very clear for us that to reach every baby, we have to be three times the size, which is why we need a warehouse that's three times the size, and that's the end goal, that we are there for everyone. And, you know, the brilliant thing about how we do this is how cost-effective it is, because it cost just under $2 million last year to deliver this service to these 18,000 kids, and that's about $118 per child. Now, $118 is not going to buy you one car seat.
No.
Or one thing. It might buy you half a dozen garments from a designer baby boutique.
Yeah.
Doesn't get you much.
Yeah.
But in many instances, we're providing a pram, a cot, a car restraint, a bouncer, a breast pump. In fact, we have 66 different items that we offer.
Wow.
So when you're a social worker and you come to our order form, you've got this huge selection of goods that you can choose from. And the best thing about that $118 was that included all of our rent costs and all of our wages.
Wow. Amazing.
So it's pretty incredible,
yes,
right?
And
it's only possible because of the generosity of the community that donates in the first place and the generosity of the volunteers.
Speaking of which, and quickly, how do people, if they've been listening, how do they help if they want to?
There's lots of ways that people can help. Volunteers are always welcome. Signing up for our newsletter, following us on social media, making a donation to our rent appeal, which is active at the moment, and we're only, as of today, we're only 50% to our target. Mm-hmm. Sharing this, you know, to telling people that they've heard about us, that there is some place that you can contact and talk to about those baby goods that you've got in the back of the garage. Mm. That you don't know what else to do with. And we encourage people to contact us through our website, tell us what they've got, and we'll tell you what we can and can't rehome, and we can make some recommendations about things that are not suitable for rehoming through St Kilda Mums. I just want to say that I love op shops, right?
I
absolutely love op shops.
Secret and passion, yeah.
they do an incredible job of recycling. But don't give op shops things that they can't
rubbish.
Sell.
Yeah.
Well, I wasn't going to say that. I was going to say don't give op shops things that they can't sell. And if you pull up to the back of any op shop and you say, I've got a pram, a cot and a car restraint, they will say, I'm sorry, we can't rehome that. So it's really important to give op shops things that they can sell. And op shops are important because there is dignity in making that purchasing decision. Mm-hmm. So if I walk into an op shop and I decide I want to hand over a $2 coin for a, you know, very old teddy bear that clearly needs a wash, then there's dignity in that purchasing decision.
Yes.
But if that very old dirty teddy bear gets put into one of our toy bundles, well, it never would.
No dignity.
It never would.
Yeah.
Toys have to be, you know, in pristine condition, and soft toys have to be freshly laundered and all that sort of stuff. So op shops still play a really important place in all of this, and I don't want people to think that
you're taking away from that.
You were trying to compete with op shops. And let's remember that the funds generated through the sale of goods and op shops go straight back into supporting the very programs and the social workers and the services that we rely on to be the conduit between us and the beneficiary families.
Jessica, it has been an absolute pleasure having you on the show. Thank you for being with us.
I can't believe it's over already.
Well, it was a fantastic chat. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, join me again the same time next week when we celebrate another great Australian life. For Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives.
You're listening to the best of Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives.